Welcome to Bicom's Hollywood Weekly Podcast. I'm Bicom CEO James Serene. I'm joined on the line by Caleb Bendor and Richard Pater. Hi, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Hi, James.
Hi there.
I think the main event I think people are trying to make sense of this week, and they've been hearing about this sort of backwards and forwards, missiles being fired from Gaza, Israeli responses overnight, and that went on sort of early hours of Monday. It looked like there'd be a big escalation, but it seemed to be some kind of ceasefire took hold. Can you just give us a sense, you know, how did this start? What kicked off this latest round of violence?
So I think what's important to remember when we think about Israel and Gaza is there are underlying structural challenges regarding the issue. There's a large humanitarian challenge in Gaza, problems with water, problems with electricity, problems with sewage. There are now domestic demonstrations against Hamas going on by regular Gazans. And there's an Israeli election season which very much wanted to try and leave Gaza outside of the discussion.
Just going back onto the demonstrations, I think people would have seen some of the footage of that, although it wasn't reported that widely, but it was quite a harsh crackdown, wasn't it? There were large numbers of people demonstrating against Hamas rule in Gaza. There were lots of journalists arrested. There was reports of live fire being fired into the air. So it was said there was some quite violent sort of putting down of those demonstrations. And some people don't understand about the kind of topography of Gaza. It's quite an open space once you're in Gaza. So it's actually quite hard for Hamas to sort of, like, you know, stop every demonstration all the time. But then we had this missile, didn't we, fired into Israel that hit this Israeli house in Mishmeret, which was a British Israeli family. So why do you think that happened?
So there is an underlying debate over why the rocket happened. Just to point out to people, Mishmeret is very, very far into Israel. We're talking about a rocket that's got a very large range. People had 45 seconds to run to the safe room. We could easily be in a very, very different situation had seven members of the family not managed to protect themselves. There is one theory that it was simply a mistake, a Hamas mistake, that a missile got fired.
How do you mistakenly fire a missile? Which is one of the things I think people here are trying to understand.
It is an excellent and very scary question. There was a situation a while ago where there was lightning that potentially fired off the missile, but that was not the case this time. There's another theory that when we say it went off by accident, we should put speech marks in by accident. And actually what we're talking about is a high stakes game of Egyptian negotiators being in Gaza, trying to create some form of arrangement or calm between Israel and Hamas. And at the last moment, Hamas firing a missile into Mishmeret just to try and raise the stakes on the assumption, which I'm not clear is correct, but on the assumption that during an election season, Israel's hands are going to be relatively tied. I think the truth remains that, you know, this is a truism that we say over and over again. It's kind of become a cliche that neither side wants escalation. I still think that's true, and generally, whenever we've been analysing the situation in Gaza, we say that the way to do it is by the distance of missiles and the number of casualties or fatalities. And I think what's interesting is you've got the Israeli Air Force. It's one of the best air forces in the world. It hit dozens of targets in Gaza and no one was killed.
And response. And that's been the very interesting thing about this, is that we had the same thing, didn't we? We really last November where there was massive Israeli Air Force attacks on Hamas military targets all over Gaza, and they're very targeted. And I think also there's a sense, isn't there, that a lot of these people in these posts and in these positions in Gaza know that they're about to be bombed. So they then take their precautions. They kind of escape to the subterranean network and they get out the way. And that potentially also limits the casualties. But certainly Israel is trying very hard not to do that. And it looks like a very formulaic response, doesn't it? And we saw that again this week, so hitting the same kind of targets, no fatalities, very few injuries, and we sort of, that seems to be the response again. And then we have this position where we reached some kind of ceasefire. So where do we think we are now?
Well, I was just gonna add the other aspect of that same kind of calibrated response can also be seen from the Hamas side this week. That after Israel struck back, as you say, kind of real estate targets and kind of symbolically they hit Ismail Haniyeh's office, which kind of the Israeli media is comparing to the idea of striking the Prime Minister's office in Jerusalem, kind of as a high real estate target, but without drawing life. Similarly, Hamas also responded with short-range rockets, which I was talking to Israeli security experts yesterday, also kind of is their interpretation of keeping the flames relatively low by hitting just the... And obviously, there's great anger amongst the communities. I was down south on the Gaza border yesterday talking to security officials and residents, and the residents have a lot of anger that despite the security apparatus being satisfied that they're only firing in the short range, it is Israeli civilians in that area that are bearing the brunt. In terms of answering your question about kind of where we are now, this is an all too familiar pattern that we will wait and see depending on the level of ferocity of the crowds tomorrow this afternoon, this evening, and tomorrow on Saturday, depending on kind of how much they are intent to breaking through the fence, will then elicit the response from the IDF, first with non-lethal means, and then if there's no other choice, with sniper fire. Depending on the number of fatalities, will then assess how Hamas will respond. Will it be again a small amount of rockets on the Gaza border area? Will they expand their range to the big population centres of Be'er Sheva, Ashkelon, Ashdod? Mm. In which case, the IDF have built up reinforcements that can then, at that stage, it can escalate further with more intense Israeli air fire, which also could then also be seen as calibrated as they will decide to strike human targets as well.
Can I just ask a question? I think this is for people to try and really understand, is what is the next level of the Israeli response? So I think there seems to be it's a bit black and white, like either you're just hitting loads of targets from the air or you move in on the ground. And you've talked before, Richard, about maybe the next level of response is you really start hitting hard the kind of things you were talking about, like Haniyeh's office and places like where the Hamas political headquarters, and you start to actually hit not just the military targets, but also their sort of governing infrastructure. But beyond that, what is the next level? How does Israel up the ante?
I think sadly, crudely, the upping the ante is also taking a cost of life of targeting Hamas forces. In the past, in other rounds of fighting, we've seen Palestinian police forces being targeted. We've seen Hamas military commanders being targeted, and I think that's the next stage. That there's only
so it's actually taking high value targets and actually saying, we're going to take out senior people.
Well, I think there's a stage before that. I mean, I think taking out lower level forces, people that are striking at people that are launching the rockets, people where they know are known Hamas military militant operators before they actually go for more senior commanders. But that's the graded step.
Let's just break down what potentially might happen tomorrow, and we can say this with some confidence because we've unfortunately seen this now for a year. But essentially, the dynamic has been that there are very large numbers of people that mass in demonstrations. There are elements of the demonstrations that are violent and involve Hamas fighters. There are people that try and break through the border fence, and there's quite heavy use in some quarters of like firebombs and grenades. And then Israel responds with live fire, and inevitably you get people caught up in that live fire. My first question is, do we think, and I've heard this from some officers on the ground in Gaza, who say that they're constantly learning the lessons and they're constantly trying to reducing that number of fatalities from live fire. Do you think that we could see less fatalities then if there is a very heavy sort of violent rioting on the border? Do you think that Israel is going to try and reduce that use of lethal fire, or do you think we'll just see more of what we saw last May?
Well, I asked a similar question to one of the security officials I met with yesterday, and they were at pains to point out that they will never issue the order to fire on women and children and innocent people, and they are making every effort only to strike at genuine what they consider terror targets, and even those people to be aiming at the ankles, not to necessarily kill them, but just to prevent them being able to breach the fence. What I didn't hear was any new tactic that they've developed. It seems to be the same modus operandi. It's only, by the way, there are only two commanders. There are two colonels on the ground there in the northern sector and the southern sector who have the ability to issue the command for live fire. So it's very they're very careful. It's very it's very orchestrated in how and yeah. when that is deemed the appropriate. But I haven't seen any new versions of response, rather than, as you said before, we get to the live fire using tear gas and other ways to try and push back an angry mob of crowd dispersal.
So just another question. So we also saw in the past, and you mentioned it, that, you know, if there are a large number of fatalities and it does get very intense, the fighting on that border fence, then Hamas and other factions have used as a tactic, not just responding with people on the ground, but they then start to fire missiles if the fatalities get to a certain point. And then Israel then responds, and then you get into a cycle of violence. Now, if something of a different magnitude happens tomorrow, and we do see that play out, and Prime Minister Netanyahu has talked about, you know, not being afraid to sort of go in, as he says, and we've got a lot of reservists now massed on the border, and we've seen more sort of tanks and artillery. What is that response? What are those tanks and artillery doing there? Is that just a sort of distant firing into Gaza, or are we actually going to see any Israeli soldiers or armor move over the fence into Gaza, in your opinion?
I think there are a number of options available to the IDF, and there are contingency plans built kind of on an escalating potential scale of what they can do. I would also say, maybe slightly cynically, that part of the build-up, again, which I saw with my own eyes, of the artillery waiting on a standing point 2 or 3 kilometres from the border, part of that is also for the consumption for the Israeli public. Actually, Netanyahu is under a lot of pressure for not having hit them harder beforehand. He has been incredibly restrained. This is at least how it's been perceived in the Israeli public, that the Israeli government has showed an enormous restraint compared to what Hamas has done. As we said, firing 2 or 3 long-range missiles into the Tel Aviv area in the last 3 weeks, and haven't elicited a kind of a proportional response yet. So partly it's there for posturing. But also, as the scenario that you pay out, if we do get into a situation where I think there are serious breaches of the fence and or rocket fire beyond just the immediate vicinity of Gaza Strip, then yeah, they have the capacity, first of all, to expand the airstrikes substantially. They can be augmented by ground fire and even potentially ground troops. But I don't think we're there yet.
I mean, essentially, if you look at the political calculations, it's a lose-lose for Netanyahu. I mean, I wrote an article this week. I basically concluded that, you know, there are no good options here. I mean, either he keeps it just responding with hitting Hamas targets and everyone says he's weak. You know, the polling in terms of people's assessment of his handling of Gaza is exactly the same as it was after last November. Just under a third saying that they're satisfied with his handling of the situation in Gaza, and nearly two-thirds saying they're not satisfied. And that's a very large number of people. If he has a tougher response and he sends in troops and soldiers start getting killed, or there is very heavy bombardment of Israeli cities and civilians are killed, then he loses there. So there isn't really a way for him to get through it. Other than just to keep doing what he's been doing, which is what we've been saying, like try and keep it calibrated, kind of keep it not from escalating too high, and just hope that it sort of dies down. I mean, we're 11, 12 days away from an election. Caleb, you had this theory about the weather that you wanted to share.
Yeah, so people who don't live in Israel might be surprised that actually the weather here is pretty bad at the moment. There was a lot of rain earlier today, and there's expected rain tomorrow. And despite the fact that that's not good if you kind of want to spend time outside, it is particularly good if you don't want a lot of thousands of demonstrators to come and try and break through the border fence in Gaza. And so weirdly, bad weather at the end of March could actually be very helpful to the IDF, in the sense that it would limit the numbers of people. And I think there was an article by Amos Harel in Haaretz today, the base said one thing is going to determine the seriousness of the demonstrations. What's that one thing? Numbers. Now, are we talking about 5 to 10 to 20,000, or are we speaking about 50,000, 60,000? And a large factor in influencing the numbers is weirdly going to be the weather. So everyone who wants quiet should also be hoping that it rains in Israel tomorrow at the end of March.
Praying for rain.
But just to add to that, though, there are the other points of the weather is that it also impinges on the IDF's ability and the Air Force ability to strike accurately, because with the cloud cover, it limits their ability to see the targets in too much detail, especially with satellite imagery and other high-tech equipment that they're using. So there is also the same theory that the IDF needs better weather before it launches if it was to launch a more substantial operation, it needs clearer weather to be able to operate to higher efficiency.
Okay, so Richard and Caleb, thank you so much for joining us. And then just to our listeners, if you are enjoying our podcast, please do rate us on iTunes. If you'd like to send us a message about issues you'd like discussed in the future, then please let us know. Respond on Twitter, respond on Facebook. Thank you for listening.